1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Is it normal to feel really horny?
Is it normal for your ankles to swell up?
Is it normal to be incredibly out of breath?
Is it normal to feel terrified of giving birth?
Is it normal that my nipples hurt so much?
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal? The Pregnancy Podcast. I'm Jessie Ware, and this podcast follows my pregnancy journey and, with the help of amazing experts, is here to help you feel reassured and inform you about all aspects of pregnancy and giving birth. We're getting up to the actual giving birth. We waited nearly 40 weeks and we're now at week 38. So it's really feeling quite real. And I think there's a lot that buzzes around in your head at this time. And there's a lot to unpick and to try and also feel really calm and collected and tranquil so the baby comes naturally. And all of this, it's like a real old head mess and there's so much to think about. So hopefully we can help you unpick some of those worries and alleviate some of those stresses by just having the conversations with our experts to give you those options and see what you fancy doing. In this episode, we will be talking about induction methods. Now, we have a reflexologist called Anna Lee, who's going to talk to me about ways to induce naturally and also have a really glorious foot rub in the process. She's my reflexologist. She's absolutely phenomenal. She really helped me out when I was really overdue with my second baby. And hopefully she'll give you some tips or show the positive benefits of having reflexology or acupressure. But first, we are joined by our regular consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, Jess McMicking, to talk about induction methods, the myths about the curry or the 10 pineapples or the dates that you're supposed to eat 6 weeks before the baby's due. We're going to talk to her all about those things, but also some of the induction methods they offer at hospitals. Hello, Jess. Thank you for joining us for week 38.
Thank you for having me back. We're very excited. We're nearly there. Nearly there.
We are really, really nearly there. Today, we're going to focus on induction, dispelling some of the myths around induction, why people may need to be induced, and how to deal with those early labour pains. First question, Jess, why would some people need to be induced?
Yeah, so induction of labour, they say about 1 in 5 women in the United Kingdom undergo an induction of labour. Now, obviously, okay, that varies because in the higher risk hospitals, it may be more than that. But generally, you know, in your circle of friends, someone has undergone an induction. The reason why one may be recommended to be induced, there can be a whole array of reasons. Probably the most common ones we see is someone might have diabetes of pregnancy, or what we call gestational diabetes. They might have a hypertensive disorder of pregnancy, whether that's preeclampsia or what we call pregnancy-induced hypertension. It may be due to a baby reason, whether a baby's, you know, measuring quite small and we're worried about the growth of the baby, or it could be because of the mother's age or some other underlying problem. So there's so many reasons why one's to be induced. What I guess has been decided at that point when one's recommended an induction is actually the benefits of getting on, having your baby, is outweighing the risks that involve with continuing your pregnancy. So it's always a sort of benefit versus risk calculation.
So let's go through some of the methods of induction first, because there are quite an array of different methods of induction, some less intrusive, some slightly more intrusive.
Yeah, so there are what we call our medical, options for the induction of labour. And what these are built on is, you know, prostaglandin. So, you know, a substance that helps sort of ripen the body. And so these ripening agents that fall under the medical category can be either what's called a propess or a pessary. And what that is it's sort of essentially like, it's not as big as a tampon, but we describe it as a tampon or a long piece of string. It gets inserted into your vagina right at the back. So what we call sort of the posterior fornix, right beside the cervix. And over 24 hours, it will release this prostaglandins that will gently open up your cervix. The other form is what we call a prostaglandin gel or a Prostin, and it does a similar sort of thing, except it's gels that are administered every 6 hours, and there's different doses for that. And it does the same sort of thing. It sort of dissolves in that region, and what it will do is let the cervix start to dilate open, soften, thin, all those sort of early type ripening stages. The other way that we can get a cervix open is a mechanical thing, and that you may or may not have heard of. It's either a Cook's catheter or a Foley's catheter, and it's a small balloon we actually put into the cervix and we blow it up with some fluid, and it will mechanically stretch open the cervix. And the reason we do all these is what we're trying to aim to get to the point of being able to break your water. So it's what we call sort of that early sort of stages of induction. The next step is what we call then the breaking of the water or the artificial rupture of membranes. And so we use this small little plastic hook. It's not painful at all. It gets inserted in, break the waters, and out comes sort of the gush of fluid that we would expect. And then the next step would be that if after following that, your body still hasn't started to contract itself, we use what's called oxytocin, which is just the artificial version of what's going on in your body, and that gets your contraction stronger and closer together. So a whole array of steps, lots and lots of different steps.
Yeah. Is there one that you feel like is the most, I presume the oxytocin drip hormone is probably the most successful or intense one?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's like, well, why can't we just jump to that step? Well, the reason that there's sort of this sequential steps is that it's broken down into that sort of ripening phase or getting the cervix open. Now, some hospitals or birth centers where you are may only choose to use the gel or the propess. You know, everyone sort of has their steps in play that they recommend. And then once we get to that second stage, whereas the breaking of the waters, the next step is always then, yes, the oxytocin infusion that we give. It is a little bit confusing. It's sort of like, but they actually each have their way of doing things. And as I said, it's the body, it's working out, well, where actually does your cervix sit at this stage? Because some women, they can actually just jump straight to their waters being broken because their cervix is already open. And so it's that pre-assessment that's also important to know what's best suited for you and your circumstances for the induction.
Now, before any of those, usually the midwife will offer you a sweep. Can you explain what a sweep is and when that will be offered by the midwife?
Yeah, so it's either called sort of a membrane sweep, a sweep. In Australia, we used to call it a stretch and sweep, which I find it probably a little bit on the funny side. So what it involves, it's an internal examination, and this can be performed by your midwife or your obstetrician. And what happens is what they're trying to do is find your cervix and to see if it's already open. And so what we do is to perform that internal examination, we obviously use sterile gloves. We use sort of a 1 or 2 finger approach, find the cervix. And if the cervix is open, even if it's open a centimeter, what we do is we put our finger inside the cervix and we gently sweep in a sort of a circular motion the membranes. And what that's trying to do is disrupt the membranes from, you know, the outer part of the uterus or the cervix and encourage that natural release of prostaglandins that then encourages your labor to start simultaneously. When can you have it? And that's a really good question. And it often is guided by what's going on in your pregnancy. So in someone who's booked for an induction for some reason, it might be earlier at say 38 weeks. It might be that your obstetrician says, well, you know what? I'm happy to do a sweep from 37 weeks when you're term. Because what we know is in some women, performing a membrane sweep will actually mean that they go into labor and therefore void the use of medications for what's involved in induction. If you've got a low-risk pregnancy, so there's nothing else going on, it may be more appropriate to perform your membrane sweep from your due date. So, you know, having one done at 40 weeks or even a few days after, your midwife might say, look, that's actually more indicated in your circumstance. And so it's obviously good to have those chats with whoever's looking after you in your pregnancy, because it might be that your membrane sweep can be offered a little bit earlier or a little bit later. And also it can be successful too. So it's a really useful tool if you want to try and avoid an induction of labour.
And people can have a couple of sweeps, can't they? I mean, I had more than a couple for my last one, so I don't know if it necessarily worked. I'd like to think after the
I think my record's five sweeps I've done on someone, but it worked. It worked on the fifth, so hands off to that person for persisting. But yeah, you are right. It's safe. That's because we use sterile gloves. We're not breaking the waters. We're just sweeping the membranes, and it's safe for the baby. And yeah, you can definitely have more than one.
Is it true that you're likely to have a more painful labour if you are induced?
Very good question. I think this is the most favourite question that's asked. And what we have to remember is everyone's pain thresholds are different. So that's number one. And that, you know, that's the same as your menstrual cycle pain. Everyone has different sort of thresholds for pain. The reason that an induction of labour can be more painful is because of that oxytocin infusion at the end, because what that's designed to do is make your contractions stronger and closer together. So yes, you are right. You know, some women say, oh, actually that was, you know, I've had an induction and then I've had a labour where I haven't needed an induction. And what I remember from the induction, it was so, so, so painful. But that's because that infusion is designed to do that. And it's got its place within that birth to get those contractions stronger and closer together, so your cervix opens and you can have a baby. Some women don't necessarily need really strong medication with the oxytocin infusion. I've seen women who've been able to tolerate it, you know, with their TENS machine, you know, whatever it is that they, you know, can utilize. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll need that stronger form of pain relief, which is the epidural, but obviously it will depend on your pain threshold.
But you're more likely to be offered it, aren't you? The epidural kind of earlier on, right?
Yeah, it's more likely that you may want it on your birth plan at some point because of the pain, yes.
So often people also think that you're more likely to have a cesarean if you have been induced. Is that a myth? Is that common?
What's good today is we do have a lot of sort of research papers that have looked at women undergoing an induction. And there was one published, I think, this year that looked at a group of women who were low risk with nothing else going on, had a normal labour, or so we say a spontaneous labour, and then had an induction of labour. And what they found is there's no difference. So an induction of labour in a setting of, you know, low risk scenario, it does not increase your chances of needing an instrumental delivery or cesarean section. What can change that is the reasons that you've been induced. So of course, you know, if you've got preeclampsia going on, what we know is preeclampsia, there is that chance for some reason you need an emergency cesarean section. And so it's what's going on in the background that's important. But inductions aren't all bad. And I'm glad that we now have, you know, this research to, I guess, help reassure women that it doesn't necessarily increase your chances of needing a cesarean.
So let's talk about how to deal with those early pains of labour. Now, we've kind of touched on it in previous episodes, but you're not allowed to be admitted in a hospital or a birth centre until you are 4 centimetres dilated. Now, for a first-time birther, or maybe even second-time, sometimes those first 4 centimetres can be quite a struggle to get to, or quite a long, drawn-out thing. How do you deal with those early pains?
Yeah, so it is a really hard, I guess, place that some women find them in, because it's that early part of the labour, what we call the latent phase, where the cervix, you know, is a little bit stubborn. You're having all these contractions, but it takes away a while to get to that point, whether it's 3 or 4 centimetres. And it's working out how do you cope at home. And so what often is a quite useful thing is that's when you can utilize a TENS machine if you have them. You can utilize your bath at home. You might have a birthing ball that keeping mobile might work for you and your tolerance for the contractions. You can take pain relief in the form of tablets, so paracetamol and dihydracodeine. sometimes what we find is even if you take those tablets, they don't necessarily work because actually your stomach and everything else in that early phase of labor doesn't tend to digest things as well, but they are an option. It's hard to know what will work best for you, but all of those things, you know, it might be that you do your yoga or things like that, that may all help with you in your early labor phase.
Do you think any of the things that people say to bring on labor work, you know, there's... Let's run through some of them. Have a curry, a really spicy curry. Have sex. Walk up and down the stairs sideways. What else is there? Clary Sage, the essential oil. Someone told me to rub a rose essential oil on my labia. What else? Someone said to drink castor oil. Yeah, there's a lot of ways because some people just don't fancy being induced. So they prefer to do it at home. Which one of those, if any of them, work, Jess?
So once again, a really favourite topic that people like to discuss. And I think that's where, you know, your mum or someone else will be like, oh, this is what I did back in the day. So to go through your list. So actually, what one you left off, which I find quite hilarious, is actually having sex.
It was the second one I brought up.
Was it? Oh god.
But let's talk about sex. Sorry. Let's talk about sex.
Let's just jump to that one first. Yeah. So why do we say have sex? Well, actually sperm contains prostaglandins. So we know that prostaglandins are an effective way of ripening the cervix and getting you there. So yes, couples, what they say is, it feels a bit different, or I'm scared I'm going to harm the baby. You won't harm the baby. It's more about what position feels right. But what we know is sex can be a way of getting yourself into labor. You then mentioned the use of curry. Now, curry, eating 8 pineapples, there's all sorts of things to do with that. And that's purely, to be honest, it gets your bowels going. It may push you into the diarrhea. But what they say is, you know, active bowels may just shudder that uterus enough that it gets you into labour. So that's the theory behind that one.
Give yourself a dicky tummy, basically. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned then... raspberry tea.
I didn't actually, you know, but yes, raspberry leaf tea. Now, I've been using raspberry leaf tea since 24 weeks because of a certain tea that I make, but I'm not telling anybody to do that, but I still have a baby in my tummy, so raspberry leaf tea, let's talk about it.
So nothing medically proven, but some midwives or, you know, they might suggest to drink it at the end of your pregnancy because it's connected to going into labor. It's not scientifically proven though, but it's not harmful. We actually say, probably avoid it earlier than that just in case, but obviously you're still pregnant today, so it hasn't had any sort of impact on that.
It's supposed to be that it kind of softens and ripens the cervix, right?
Exactly.
It tastes nice. So.
I haven't tried it myself, but I've heard it does taste nice. Then there's obviously acupuncture, lighting candles, all those sorts of things that once again relax the body. And sometimes a relaxed mind will relax the body and actually therefore carry its benefits and get you into labor. So once again, some things aren't necessarily scientifically proven, but they're safe. And in some women, they've actually worked really, really well.
Just don't do what my mate did when she thought about the sex. She gave her husband a blowjob and thought that that was the way to do it. I think it has to go up a different route rather than
I'm not sure what paper she's reading on that one.
Yeah, but bless her. Bless her. Exactly what you want to be doing at 42 weeks.
I think the other one I wanted to mention about the sideways walking, I have heard of that. Or someone the other day was walking with one leg in the air.
How do you walk with one leg in the air?
I think they were hopping. They were sending me a video. It was a friend, don't worry. But I did get the giggles. I didn't recommend that, but I was more worried she'd fall over.
No, totally.
Please don't fall over.
We've talked about with in our exercise bonus edition with Anne Collins-Ackroyd, the yoga teacher, some of these walks that a doctor called Dr. Gary Mota encourages, which just kind of, I guess, encourage your baby to get down into the optimal position. And if you're lucky, I may even do them on the Instagram page. So yeah, and I'll show them because it's too hard, but it's kind of doing a kind of scooping thing and shuffling and trying to just get. So I can imagine that the walking up and down the stairs sideways, it's just kind of getting that baby into a
same thing.
Great position as deep into your pelvis as possible, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just about helping that baby. And what the thing is the baby then puts pressure on your cervix. So that's what it is. And then it kickstarts things.
So we have a voice note from a lady called Lucy who has a question about how far you can go over 42 weeks and due dates.
Hello, my name is Lucy. I'm 33 weeks pregnant and I've got a question about due dates and what would be considered overdue. So in my case, when I came off the pill, I actually didn't have my period for 3 months and then found out I was pregnant. So from the start, estimating my due date has been, I imagine, a little bit of a guesswork. But nevertheless, like in the pregnancy, she's followed the route of what they would have expected. So say at 32 weeks, my belly was measuring 32 centimeters and the baby's, thigh and head circumference and abdomen measurements were also all aligned to 32 weeks. So I guess my question is, does that mean that when they come to make decisions about what would be considered, I don't know how they word it, but like dangerously overdue, if it was 42 weeks and they decide I needed to be induced, can I trust that? Or is there scope for me to be arguing that actually maybe she isn't quite 42 weeks and could be given a few more days? Because I imagine they've based these measurements on kind of average bell curves. So I wonder whether she could be a little bit younger or a little bit older than they think. So yeah, if you have any advice on this, I would be really grateful because I really would love to have a natural birth if I could and avoid induction. So yeah, I really want to be able to advocate for myself and the little one to come when she's ready.
Thank you, Lucy. Lucy there, just wanting to try and have a natural birth and worrying that the due date's wrong. Now, how overdue do you let people go and what are the risks of going over 42 weeks?
Yeah, so Lucy, obviously she started off her pregnancy in a sort of unique circumstance where she couldn't be guided by her menstrual period dates. Now, in the United Kingdom, we actually use the 12-week scan to calculate one's due date, usually. And so what Lucy can be rest assured is that's probably what they base their scan on. So it's very routine that they do that. And that's sort of looking at the baby's size at that time and making that decision for her due date. When do we do post-dates inductions? And that's a really good question. And in some hospitals, what they might do is start them 7 days over your due date, but they can go up to 14 days over. But that will be guided by what's going on in the pregnancy and what your local hospital or birth centre recommend. Why we don't let you go too far. So pregnancies, once they get to that 42-week mark, is we worry about, you know, the risks to the baby. And in particular, the placenta, although we know that it doesn't have a deadline where it switches off, it can start to not work as effectively. And so therefore that baby's at risk once it sort of goes over the 42-week mark of having meconium where it doesn't poo on the inside, or the placenta not continuing to feed that baby with that really good supply of blood and nutrients. And so we tend not to encourage anything beyond 42 weeks. If anyone ever had concerns or they wanted to explore what their options were, you know, you're definitely able to with both your midwife and obstetrician. And what they can do is discuss the rationale for the induction. They may offer another ultrasound just to check on things if someone wanted to be considered to go further than the recommendations. But definitely the priority is keeping you safe, but also keeping your baby safe.
Thank you, Lucy. And thanks, Jess, for answering a lot of questions about that early stage of labour, induction, whether it's natural or medical. We're going to speak to a reflexologist, Anna Lee, who actually is going to talk a bit about, well, reflexology and how that can help induce labour, be a natural form of induction. But before we speak to her, let's talk about what's happening with the baby at 38 weeks. I mean, is there much happening apart from the baby growing because it's now a term baby?
Yeah, well, the babies, they tend to, their growth does plateau a little bit towards the end. So they're not doing that sort of growth that you see earlier in the third trimester, which is nice, reassuring. But they do obviously continue to grow. What happens is the baby's probably nuzzling more and more down into your pelvic cavity. So some women say, actually, oh, the shape of my bump has changed. And that might be that your baby has become engaged. It may be that your baby, you know, is twisting and turning its head as it descends down, and it can result in your tummy, you know, slightly changing in shape. You may start to feel more pressure. You may need to go to the loo a lot more, things like that. It's all reassuring that your baby's getting ready for that onset of labour.
Well, that's exciting. And now it's just the waiting game, isn't it?
The waiting game, the fun game.
Yeah, really, really fun. I mean, I do like how the French do a due window. That's what they do, like a due window. So they don't actually give you a date. And I think it's far more healthy doing it that way.
No, I think what it also does is take the pressure off as well. And I think having a due window things like that really help you prepare, but also sort of takes that pressure off and gets you mentally ready for things to happen naturally.
Thanks, Jess, for being here. And we'll speak to you at 40 weeks.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for having me.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thank you, Jess McMicking, for going through some of the medical induction methods and also some of the myths. Now, some of you may not fancy any of those options. There are other options that you can go for as well if you're getting past that due date and you're really raring to go. And one that I tried was reflexology and acupuncture. So I decided to invite my reflexologist, Anna Lee, who specialises in pregnancy, to join us to explain what reflexology is. Thank you, Anna, for being here.
Hello.
Hello. So, Anna, what is reflexology for people that don't know what it is?
So reflexology is a non-invasive complementary therapy which uses the feet to treat the whole body. Some reflexologists also use the hands and the ears and the face, but I mainly stick to the feet.
So it feels very nice.
Yeah, the main premise of reflexology is to be a relaxing treatment, and it's something that a lot of pregnant women can really enjoy when they're feeling they're not very flexible, they can't move around too much, and frankly can't actually reach their feet a lot of the time. Yeah. So to have something which is a treat for the feet is very welcome.
So when would be the best time for somebody to access reflexology? Because can it help you? We're going to talk a bit about induction and pain management, mm-hmm. Yeah. But is there the best time for you to start, or could you have it throughout your pregnancy?
Yes. So I would say the optimum treatments really go throughout the pregnancy. So from the first trimester to the third and beyond. So after you've had a baby too. Mm. I think people are quite nervous in the first trimester, especially when it's their first baby, because they don't know what to expect. And, you know, it is one of the most vulnerable times. But if you find somebody who is trained in pregnancy reflexology and knows what to do, knows which areas you would avoid at that time, then it's a really lovely treatment to experience, because actually it can really help with any kind of anxiety that you might have in that first stage.
I mean, I just had you upstairs doing a treatment for me and I nodded off. And usually we chat, and I love chatting to you. But you said, do you want to have the music on today? And I was like, I'm really tired. Yes, I think I do. And I feel so relaxed. And tell me how my body reacted. You said something after when we finished the treatment about the how my body reacted to it this time.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, if you're able to completely relax and zone out, then you get the most benefit from the treatment. That's not to say that, you know, having, if you need to talk and you want to talk, that's completely fine. But what happened today was a little bit different because I think you received the treatment really well. So you were relaxed. We had the music playing. I wasn't talking. You weren't talking to me, and you were able to kind of really enjoy the benefits of it. And that's what it's about. It's about well-being, and it's about trying to kind of to relax you, because there's lots of stress associated with pregnancy. There's lots of anxiety associated with it, and just having something that allows you to relax is hugely beneficial.
So I guess for people that are at that 38-week stage and due date is looming, reflexology can really help settle those anxieties of labour, whether you're scared about giving birth, whether you're scared that you're going to be overdue, all of that can be really helpful. However, also, what you're doing when I'm relaxing and zoning out, you're also understanding what's going on in my body and what areas need more attention.
Yeah, so I'd say that most women contact me at this stage.
Right.
So you're 38 weeks pregnant at the moment. Most people get in touch around now, and it's with a view to what's happening in the next few weeks in labour. And really at this stage, it's kind of you're full term, you know, you've kind of, well, from 37 weeks onwards, you know, you're counted as full term. So at this stage, we start just sort of prepping the body a little bit more, going sort of towards that labour time. So I'm really working on your lymphatic system, because as you've experienced in these sort of recent hot weather days, you know, you've had some swelling around the ankles. So what's really important is kind of getting some lymphatic drainage going, getting a flow going within the body, trying to kind of get a bit of movement around the ankles, which makes it more comfortable for you in general. But also just starting to work on things like the solar plexus, which is the most grounding point in reflexology. And yes, there is some anxiety around kind of, you know, it's a life change. However many babies you've had, whether it's the first, second, third, whatever, there is always a life change involved. And so it's just really kind of trying to prep your body. So I'm working from an emotional and a physical point of view. So I'll be focusing on the solar plexus, which is the most grounding point in reflexology, and also the adrenals, which are part of the endocrine system, and points like the pituitary gland as well, which is the gland which, along with the hypothalamus, which is situated in the brain, starts the release of oxytocin, which is what will eventually get your contractions going. That's not something that I'm going to be stimulating a lot at 38 weeks, but it's just something that I'm sort of starting to prep a little bit, starting to sort of see, you know, see how things are going with that, and just, again, kind of promote some flow.
So you can ramp up the treatment.
Yes.
But at this stage, you wouldn't until 40 weeks.
During most of your pregnancy, the focus is on relaxation. And also, if there've been any aches and pains associated with pregnancy, any pregnancy symptoms like insomnia, for example, or if you've got pelvic girdle pain or aching hips, aching lower back. Some people have a terrible time with reflux, acid reflux, all sorts of things like that. So I'll be doing a more relaxing treatment, but then kind of focusing on whatever symptoms are coming up. But then, yes, there's a change in the quality of the treatment as we get closer to the due date. So I will start to use a slightly firmer pressure from about 38 weeks onwards. And I will be using, I'll be going to the pituitary gland a little bit more. I'll start to really work on the lymphatic system. And then 39 weeks, then we get to 40 weeks. And that's the time when, providing you're okay with it, providing you feel comfortable with it, if we get to your estimated due date, then we can start using acupressure points, which are all situated around the feet and the lower leg. And it's quite a firm treatment when you get to that stage.
So it's not as relaxing.
So, well, it can be. It can be. I mean, I always prep my clients saying, you know, there might be some areas which are really quite painful, quite bracing when I'm going into them hard. Because sometimes I use my knuckles on certain points, which sounds really painful. But actually, for some women, they are completely zonked out and don't really notice it. But for other women, it can be really sensitive. So I just work with the people that I have in front of me because everybody's unique. And if it does get a little bit strong, what I say is, you know, it's a little bit like preparation for labour in some ways. You're, you know, I'll only be on these points for a first sort of 5 to 10 seconds.
Breathe through it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so what I find so fascinating about reflexology is that a client may come to you with symptoms already, like they may have terrible nausea, acid reflux, sciatica, insomnia, and they'll offer these to you and you will be able to understand that and communicate and try and alleviate those symptoms through reflexology. Or there's the other way that you'll say, how's your colon? You always ask me how my colon is at the moment. She'll be like, oh, it's a bit crunchy on the foot where the colon point is. And I'll be like, I hadn't really thought about it. So it's kind of a sense of discovery.
Yeah, it's really like a map on the feet. So I'm tracing your body. Everything is represented on the feet. So there are areas for the sinuses, for the liver, for the uterus, for the hips, you name it, you've got it on the feet. Yeah. So yeah, there will be things that people present with. So as you've said, you've listed them, but things also like migraines that can be just associated with pregnancy, headaches. And so I'll be working on all of those things if they're the things that the people are struggling with. Mm. But then there'll be other things that come up at the same time. So if I find something underneath the skin, which is of a different kind of texture, or I feel that there's a little, it's a little bit hard or sometimes a little bit soft, it just depends. Then that can be an indication that something might need a little bit more work.
So basically, if people fancy it, they should have reflexology throughout their pregnancy and enjoy that. But let's talk about induction and those acupressure points that you're going to work on. So, okay, for me, for an example, with my pituitary gland, I'm always asking you, well, how's it doing? Because I'm like interested to know whether it's raring to go. And today you said it wasn't raring. Had it improved from 37 weeks? Like, that's all I need to know. I just need to know if I'm making progress.
I don't think there's a way of honestly saying whether it's making progress or not.
Fine.
I mean, your pituitary gland is your pituitary gland.
Yeah.
But what I would say is that there are some times when it might feel different from at other times. Mm-hmm. And that could be an indication that things are moving in a different direction. But, you know, that's the same if I'm treating people and they're at a different stage in their menstrual cycle, that might be the case too. So it's the pituitary gland is a gland, so it produces hormone and it changes, you know, accordingly, because the endocrine system is it houses the glands and it's all connected. And so, you know, it's difficult for me to say whether, you know, there's something specifically going on with the pituitary gland. But if it feels, if the quality of it feels a little bit different, then I might say something to you.
Fine, I'm not going to have the baby tonight. Fine, I accept it. Have you had any, I know this is an impossible question to ask, but have you seen immediate or positive, incredibly positive effects from reflexology with women going into labor after they've basically, if they're going to come and see you and you're going to press that, what's the spleen one, the one that's really tender on your leg that everyone's supposed to avoid?
Spleen six. That's an acupressure point.
Yeah. And like you do, and they're raring to go. They want this baby, and then they're like, oh my god, I'm in labor now. Have you ever had that, or is it just not going to be like that?
The body goes into labor when it's ready.
Yes. Yes.
However, I have had quite a few instances of people coming to see me for a treatment. I remember a few years ago I was working in my treatment rooms and somebody was in the waiting room and they started having first stages of contractions, really. And they wanted to go ahead with the treatment and we did. And by the end of the treatment, my client was ready to go to hospital in a taxi, because it had kind of what it had done is it had kind of supported the contractions. So it's like a, particularly working on the pituitary gland, it's a little bit like a red button in a way. And if you can keep the momentum going, then that's what you want, because, you know, contractions can start, they can fade away. You can have a false labour sometimes. You can really think that you're moving into established labour and then everything dies off. So just maintaining that pressure to the pituitary gland can and also the uterus in general. And lots of those acupressure points are all responsible for getting the uterus to contract and for increasing blood flow to the uterus.
Right.
So when you're working in that way, and I'm working in quite a repetitive way at a stage like that, then yes, you can have quite immediate effects. It's also, I had a client a few years ago as well who, whose waters had broken. She wanted to have a home birth. Her waters had broken at home, and the hospital were concerned about her, about the time lapse.
Usually have about 24 hours, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And so she wanted to try and maintain her contractions. And again, you know, the contractions were coming thick and fast. I was treating her in her living room, and she managed to get them going so that she was able to have the home birth.
Is it, because I mean, it would be really nice to be able to have like a reflexologist on speed dial in that early stage of labour.
Yeah.
But sometimes unlikely, you don't know, it's going to be in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Anna, you may not fancy coming to New Cross in the middle of the night. Are there any points that birthing partners can learn about to assist the person giving birth?
Yes, there are. And actually, I think I showed a few of those to you last time, and Sam was helping with them. So there
needs a refresher, I can tell you that right now. He hasn't touched my feet for about, well, since then.
Okay, so yes. So at this stage, you're still kind of really mindful of not, you don't want to kind of do so much pressure that somebody is kind of going to be hurting. You don't want to cause pain or anything like that. But a lot of the techniques that I show are really easy to follow. So particularly on the pituitary gland, it's a bit of a skill, you know, it's a skill to kind of find the point and to use pressure. But what's wonderful about reflexology is that it's really flexible. So it doesn't matter what position you are in, I guess, unless you're standing on your feet. But then there's vertical reflexology, which can work with that. That's not something that I do, but it's something that I know other reflexologists will use. But when I've used it, somebody might be, say, leaning over a ball, or they might be sitting on the floor in some way, anything that's comfortable. And providing you can get a little bit of leverage on the toes, you can really get into lots of these acupressure points and some of the reflexes. So yeah, so what I would do is at around this stage, if there's a partner around, I would invite the partner into the last stages of the reflexology treatment. And then we could go through some of those points together so that they feel that they can give you some support. And that's actually a really lovely thing for partners to do, because you can feel like, you know, you're a bit of a spare part sometimes. Obviously, there are times when you don't want anybody anywhere near you. And that's your, you know, that's however you're feeling at the time. But if there are techniques that the partner feels comfortable to use, then I think it's a great thing to do.
So if you're a bit like me and rather impatient and you're listening to this and maybe you've jumped ahead a few weeks and you're not actually at 38 weeks, or maybe you're a bit earlier, are there absolute no-nos where you ethically you would never touch these points yet or try and stimulate them?
I would always recommend working with a trained reflexologist.
Yeah.
And you see, that goes for showing a partner kind of some of the points as well, because I think the reflexologist would be very mindful of the points which are safe to use and which are easy to access and which don't require much skill. I mean, there's something to be said for just giving a really lovely foot massage at this stage as well.
Yeah.
And having that kind of connection with the feet. But there are some points which you absolutely do not use, you don't go to them before the estimated due date, and that would be a lot of the acupressure points that I would use from this stage. But also, you know, you don't want to be stimulating the uterus too much before the 38-week stage. You don't want to be stimulating the pituitary gland too much. You don't want to be stimulating the adrenal glands too much at this stage. You have to be really mindful of where somebody is in pregnancy. And, you know, I do get requests sometimes from people who are impatient wanting me to do things, but I can't because ethically it's not where I'm comfortable to go.
Yeah.
And so that's just something that, you know, we talk about. And perhaps that's also an indication of, you know, somebody's kind of more emotional state as well. Yeah. And so that's something that we would work with in a slightly different way. For example, you know, I might just ask a few questions about, you know, their concerns. Sometimes people they're really worried about what interventions they might be having. Mm. Also, for example, if a woman is age 40 and they've gone into a higher risk category, then, you know, that can be, it can be really difficult because there's physically nothing wrong with them, but there's just something about going in, you know, just a flip of the calendar, and then suddenly they're in a different area. So I think that just working with people so that they, you know, they're communicating with me about how they're feeling, and I can try and work with how some anxiety might be manifesting in them.
So you kind of almost become a therapist as well.
There is a huge element of that, I think. I mean, you know, it's definitely using counselling skills because people are in quite vulnerable positions. Mm. And what I would say is that, you know, lots of women really thrive during pregnancy. Some find it incredibly difficult. And as I said, they're approaching a massive life change. Mm. And there can be all sorts of different worries around around the labour, around giving birth, but also what might happen afterwards. Mm. People are concerned about how they're going to feed their babies, whether they're going to be able to sleep, even how they're going to fit back into their clothes. Mm. There's all sorts of things which, you know, it changes. It's a huge life change. And so that's something that I really try and work with.
And postnatally, would you recommend a pregnant person coming to see you or seeing a reflexologist, and how that can help?
I would absolutely recommend postnatally. Mm. And I wish I could see more of my clients postnatally, because I think that's actually a time when women need it most. Mm. There's so much emphasis on what happens before the baby's born. Mm. And actually, you know, there's a lot of attention on women before the baby's born because everyone's taking care of you. You know, you're pregnant, and so everyone's asking how you are. After the baby's born, the focus tends to be more on the baby. Mm. And so for women, it can be really hard. You're not sleeping very well. Sometimes you might have issues with your milk coming in, feeding in general, or breast engorgement, things like that. It depends also how labour has gone for you. So perhaps you've had more of an intervention than you were expecting. You might be in recovery. You might not be finding it very easy to sit down. There are all sorts of things which can affect you postnatally, which I really like to work with. And I'm really flexible around the newborn baby as well. So it's fine to be moving around. It's fine for babies to be feeding or for partners to be in the room. It's fine if you need to go to the toilet, you know, any of those things, we just work around. But I think it's a hugely important time, and just kind of going into those few weeks when, after the kind of the massive adrenaline rush of giving birth and the feelings that go with that, sometimes there can be a real crash emotionally as well. Mm. And it might not take place for kind of 3 or 4 weeks afterwards, and then the effects of your new life change are really kind of taking hold. And that's a really wonderful time to have somebody with you who is kind of empathic and who is just focusing on you and who is able to just give you a hands-on therapy. It's body work, it's a hands-on therapy, and there's something really healing about that.
One thing I wanted to know was, how does reflexology differ to acupuncture? Because some people may have been suggested acupuncture. Do they kind of work in the same way, because you'll be working on the acupressure points?
Yeah, so
an acupuncturist,
I mean, I'm not an acupuncturist,
no.
But they sort of follow a similar theory, if you like, in that, you know, you're working with the energy flowing around the body. Mm. I would say that reflexology and acupuncture complement each other.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I know lots of women who will have, especially in these later stages of pregnancy, they will have reflexology and acupuncture alternately. I think it's just a different way of working, and they will have, you know, they'll both have their benefits. I think the key is not to kind of overstimulate. I certainly wouldn't recommend having two different treatments like that in the same day or anything like that. But I would say that some people don't like having their feet touched. You know, they don't. So maybe they would go for acupuncture. Sometimes people really do not like needles. And so it depends what's right for you. You will kind of find your way in what treatments work for you and what you feel most comfortable with.
And a price point for some people that may feel like they can't be spending a certain amount of money on themselves, especially when they're about to buy cots and buggies and feeding stuff and clothes. And, you know, it can reflexology be affordable? Is there any websites that offer a kind of a lower price point?
Yeah, I think treatment prices vary around the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might find that if you want to book a series of treatments, some reflexologists will give a discount. I'm a member of the Association of Reflexologists, which is one of the main bodies for reflexology in the UK. And they have a facility on their website where you can type in your postcode and you can find a reflexologist. And they will also list the practitioners who are specialising in pregnancy. And I think that's something that's quite important because, you know, you want your practitioner to feel comfortable treating you. It's all about things like the positioning, for example. You know, if somebody hasn't worked with pregnant women before, they might not understand how uncomfortable it can be to be in certain positions. If you know and you understand and you feel confident about working, then you know, that's kind of the best place to be, because then everybody's on the same page.
Thank you, Anna, for talking to us about reflexology. Thank you for giving me a wonderful treatment today. I will see you in a few days because I love it so much. And I'll be on week 39 next week. So what is that, when we start getting the old knuckles in, yeah?
No. We'll wait until 40.
Fine. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
If you are enjoying Is It Normal, the pregnancy podcast, we would love to hear from you. Review it if you fancy, or you can just give it a little like or subscribe. It all really, really helps to build the community of other pregnant women that are going through this too. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to be in your ears again very soon.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.